I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. When Kansas State legislators adjourned earlier this month, they left some major business unfinished. So before they head back to the Capitol in May, we asked a few of them to stop by to talk about the wrap-up session. There's a tax and budget plan that will have to reduce a projected $1 billion revenue shortfall, account for a new school funding formula, and avoid a veto by Governor Sam Brownback. Speaking of school funding, lawmakers still have to get that formula figured out. Then there's the matter of the governor's veto of Medicaid expansion in the state. We'll look at it all on Up to Date after this hour's news. Kansas lawmakers are in a jam. They've got too much work and too little time when they return to work next week. The to-do list looks something like this: resolve a $1 billion budget gap, adopt a new school finance formula and funding plan that meets the expectations of the state Supreme Court, figure out which taxes they will increase and perhaps what spending they will cut, and what the state tax system will look like going forward, and finally, just maybe, vote one more time on Medicaid expansion in Kansas. It's a big load for our wrap-up session. With us to talk about it are Stephanie Clayton. She's an Overland Park Republican. And Stephanie, always good to have you here.
Thank you, Steve.
Melissa Rooker is a Fairway Republican. Melissa, good to have you.
Thank you.
Jared Owsley is a Merriam Democrat. Jared, welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Representative Rooker, you were all told to plan to work for 2 weeks straight. I'm not sure that's going to be long enough to tackle all this stuff, or am I wrong here?
Oh, I would say that's an intelligent guess that we may well need more time. We've left most of the heavy lifting for the veto session.
2 weeks, is that going to do it, Stephanie?
Let's just say this. I've planned childcare for several weeks beyond that two-week limit, just in case.
Jared, what do you think?
I don't really know what to think, I'll tell you the truth. The new speaker, it'll be a true test on his leadership, you know, when we get back, because there's a lot of things different, and I'm only starting my second term, but anything's possible in the KS leg.
You know, Jared, I was wondering if you guys were expecting that more progress would be made during the regular session and not so much put off for the end here. Am I seeing that right? Does that go without saying?
It would have been nice. I mean, we had the budget put out. We had Medicaid expansion passed. We had a lot of things done, and we're back at the start.
Yeah. The record for the longest session is, what, mid-June, something like that?
Yes.
That would
be 115 days, I believe.
Yeah.
So, and that was back in 2015.
And the betting line is that you're going to exceed that. Is that where the wise money's going right now?
I would sincerely hope not. But if we need to be there, we'll be there as long as it takes. I think, ideally, we want to take our time and get this work done properly. My concern is seeing poor legislation rammed through in the middle of the night on a weekend. That's when we start seeing legislation that usually isn't very good.
You know, these are all such big, meaty issues that you guys are up against here. School finance, you know, the budget, taxes, what they look like, maybe Medicaid expansion. None of these are lightweight issues here, Stephanie.
No, they're not. But we have a legislature that was sent there with overwhelming victories by a public that really wants to see major change in these issues. And so these politicians, although many of them are new, they have heard very clearly from their people, and they were sent here with large election margins to solve these problems. And so I think that their resolve is very strong. I have every faith in this freshman class, actually, that they will vote in the right way and make the best decisions. And I think we'll come out of this better for that.
Well, for our listeners and your constituents, if they want to weigh in here on what needs to happen in the Kansas legislature the next few weeks, 816-235-2888 is the number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Melissa Rooker, what are you hearing from your constituents during the time you've been home on break here? Because you were saying before the show that even a grocery store visit becomes a place where you spend a lot of time talking to people.
People are very appreciative for the work I've been doing. I've heard from a lot of folks, and it consistently is words of gratitude and support.
Mm-hmm. What do they want to see happen here the next few weeks?
Well, I think that the work we have ahead of us, the solutions are self-evident. We need to fix the structure in our tax code and get things right. I think leadership held out to hear the April revenue forecast. And while, you know, certainly it was encouraging that it was not yet.
A little more money, not a lot.
You know, it wasn't. Since 2014, all we have had from those forecasts are downgrades. So you set the bar low enough and we're finally kind of meeting it. So it still leaves us with a $900 million shortfall over the next 2 years, plus the work we have to do on school finance.
Jared Owsley, I'm wondering if your constituents are more tuned in to the sometimes arcane workings of the Kansas legislature than what you might otherwise hear from folks.
You know, House District 24 is full of wonderful people, and I, like Representative Rooker, hear a lot more praise than I do criticism. And there's some obvious work left to do as far as our constitutional obligations, balancing the budget, getting the revenue package, the school finance formula. But then there's a lot of lifting left to do that's not constitutionally obligatory. Is that a word?
Yeah, sure.
You know, we had Medicaid expansion. We've been working extensively on foster care reform and children and seniors committee, and I've received a lot of praise for our work on that, and furthermore, the necessity for it. So that's another thing that when we get back, I hope that comes up. And then we've got guns on campuses. You know, all of us are in Northeast Johnson County, and, you know, the KU hospital down there needs this. Yeah. So we have a lot of heavy lifting to do when we get back outside of our daily routine, so to speak.
You know, Stephanie Clayton, I haven't mentioned the guns on the KU Medical Center campus. And again, that's something the Star's editorial board has spoken out against sharply, saying that guns should not be allowed in a major institution like the KU hospital. What are the prospects for getting guns banned from there?
Well, I would sincerely hope that debate is had on the House floor, because I think that what the people of Kansas want is to hear what their legislators think, how their legislators will vote, to see all possibilities. Is open floor debate a messy process? Absolutely. This is why we hear so many terms comparing us to a sausage making factory or a killing floor. It's bloody, it's visceral. It absolutely needs to occur in the public eye. Every aspect from that first bill introduction or series of bill introductions all the way to hearings through to floor amendments. And so regardless of what the outcome is, I am hoping for an open and free debate among legislators, because that way the people will know who their legislators are, what they value, and what they support.
You don't want to see guns in the KU Medical Center.
Yes, I would not like to see that. I did introduce a bill earlier that would have extended that exemption for that facility and our campuses and many other facilities indefinitely. So, yes, I would not support that.
What's your concern there? Because obviously the gun laws in Kansas have been strengthened in recent years. The conservatives have pushed really hard to allow more concealed carry kinds of activities in Kansas. What's your concern about having weapons in the KU Medical Center?
Well, one of my main concerns is just hearing from the professionals there. It is very difficult to work in an environment that is that dangerous. And I can't think of
a
more
place.
Emotionally fraught environment than a hospital. And I think when we think about the workers that are there, the patients, the visitors, that we need to take that into consideration and allow that local entity to determine what their policy is. They know what they need more than the state knows, and their authority should be recognized.
The legislature's had 3 months to wrestle with this, and yet this exemption for the hospital has not been granted. How optimistic or pessimistic are you that this exemption might be granted going forward?
You'd like me to be honest. I would assume. I'm fairly pessimistic, but I always hold out hope until that gavel drops at the end of session. So perhaps we'll find a way.
Alyssa Rooker, this hospital is just outside of your district. How do you rate the chances for the exemption getting put into place here?
Well, several parts of it are in my district.
Mm-hmm.
So, like Stephanie, that's right. I remain optimistic that we will have a chance to have the debate. You know, people who say it's about protecting the Second Amendment, I've done a lot of background on this, and you start with the U.S. Supreme Court decision that opened the door to laws such as ours, the Heller decision in 2008. It was landmark. It was the first time the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on our right to keep handguns and carry them. It was the majority opinion was authored by Antonin Scalia, and in it, he entertained that the Second Amendment, like the other amendments that guarantee our rights, does not come without certain limitations. He said it does not guarantee any time, anywhere, under any circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And so in researching some of the states where KU Hospital's top competitors are, MD Anderson in Texas is in the top five. And Texas has a law that is extraordinarily similar to the Kansas law that we passed. However, their law permanently exempted their healthcare facilities up front. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm curious. I've been trying to get at how the NRA scored that vote for the lawmakers in Texas, because they managed to get it done. Our exemption was a temporary one. But people forget that adequate security measures, as defined in our state statute, is a very narrow, very arbitrary definition that's specific to having metal detectors and the security staff at the entrances. But KU has its own police department at the medical complex. So there is not an absence of security. It is not an unsafe place for people to be.
Right. For listeners who want to chime in here, 816-235-2888 is the number, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's go to some calls here. Kim from Overland Park. Kim, you're on with our Kansas lawmakers here this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling about school finance.
Yeah.
And knowing where we're at and how is it going to look for Shawnee Mission School District? Is it going to be dramatically different than what we saw in 92? Or are we, because of the way the constitutionality of it all, is it going to have to look similar to the way it was in 92? In other words, are we going to be able to get more money into our district?
A big concern. Great question, Kim. Melissa Rooker, you've worked hard on school finance. Tell us where you see things going there.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for the call. I would suggest that the formula will look very much like it has since 92. But it will, if we do our job and infuse more money into the system overall, it will absolutely bring more money into our local districts such as Shawnee Mission. But in doing the research and living under the block grant, which was, you know, a very different form of funding schools, and in researching a variety of different ideas through the course of the work of the K-12 Budget Committee, which I sit on, we settled back on a formula that provides baseline funding per pupil and then adds added categories of weight for each demographic issue and characteristic that students bring to school with them. It's what virtually all states in the country have, some version of a formula like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is not to change for the sake of change. The point is to improve funding overall and provide a constitutionally sound distribution model that will deal with the needs each district has.
You know, Kim's call references the 92 school funding formula, which provided lots of different caveats, very complicated for students with special needs, those kinds of things.
Right.
Do you expect those aspects, those little breakouts, if you will, for different kinds of students to be included in this new formula?
Yeah, I you know, this notion that complexity is a bad thing, I think ignores the fact that we're dealing with little people, and people are have individual needs and characteristics. So complexity should not be the enemy just because. A formula that responds to the needs of the individual students, I think, is an appropriate method of doing things.
Representative Jared Owsley, you represent a district in Merriam. You're a Democrat. What are your concerns about the school funding formula going forward and what you want to see in it?
The funding of the formula?
Yeah. What are your concerns about it?
I think if we would have funded the old formula to constitutional obligation, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were speaking of the weightings right there, and I think they're absolutely essential because, Steve, I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm a small business owner, and I appreciate your guys' new logo, All Kinds Open Minds, the name of my paint contracting business in my yesteryear was All Kinds.
Stole it from you, Jared.
but that being said, no two situations are the same. And that goes for, you know, homes and children just the same. And we are talking about little people, but we're talking about our future, and we want to invest in our future, and that is investing in public education. So I think the funding of the formula and the weightings being back in there is my biggest concern. And so far, the new formula is looking a lot like the old formula. The
92 formula you're talking
about. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kansas Constitution says suitable.
Mm-hmm.
And the definition of suitable is appropriate for a particular person, purpose, or situation.
Mm-hmm.
And no two person, purpose, or situation are the same. Therefore, you've got to have that flexibility, you know, built in, and that's going to be the only way to achieve the outcome.
Representative Stephanie Clayton, one idea being kicked around here as a result of the Supreme Court ruling and this influx of money that's going to be coming into the system is the prospect, and it's only that at this point, for all-day kindergarten. Do you expect that? That would be a big change. Kansas has, in some minds, inexplicably gone without it for a very long time. Are we going to emerge from this session with all-day kindergarten in Kansas?
Yes, I would think that would be one of the few things about which I am optimistic, because you have strong support of this even from the governor. And so you see that from many different factions, many different parties. And so, yes, I think that we will see that come out of that formula.
You know, how much money, Melissa, do we have to spend, in your view, to meet the expectation of the state Supreme Court? You hear $500 million, you hear $800 million. Where does this thing have to land in your view?
Somewhere in between those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that.
And if it's spread out over several years, the legislature is given a chance to ramp up to those numbers?
I think so.
Can you live with that?
Yeah. I think there's understanding that even if we were to have the money in the bank and be able to appropriate $800 million next year, schools can't spend it that quickly. So, you know, there has to be hiring, there has to be planning and programming. And so I do think that it's reasonable to ramp up funding over a period of time. You know, anywhere from 3 to 5 years has been bandied about. The bill currently has a 5-year escalation of funding, which is a little longer than I would like it to be, but I'm willing to work with that if we can get there.
Do you expect all-day kindergarten to be part of this
Yes.
new plan as we emerge from this?
Absolutely. There's no greater way to launch kids on their educational journey than to prepare them early. And I think,
why haven't we had that before now? I've always been flummoxed as a parent myself at one point. Why didn't Kansas have all-day kindergarten? A lot of states do.
A lot of states do, but it's a newer concept. So I think at the time the formula was passed in 92, kindergarten was still half day. And it has taken some time to bring people along to the idea of it. And by people, I mean my colleagues.
Right.
You know, there's a certain group that is very reluctant to think that government-run schools should have their kids a minute longer than necessary. So
yeah,
it's kind of anathema to think that kids in kindergarten should have to be there all day. And what has taken some time is to remind that we're not changing the age requirements and mandating all-day kindergarten. We're simply providing funding for the time that students are spending sitting in or being in classrooms in our schools. Right now, we have kids there all day who are only being funded for half a day.
So districts could opt in for all-day kindergarten or not then, it sounds like?
I think most districts offer it, and parents have the option.
Yeah.
In most cases, I don't know. Well, we can't legally mandate that students attend all day. So parents have had the option of a half or a full day, but the point being that when the full day is chosen, there still is only half-time funding. So it's been made up through either parent-paid fees or districts having to find the funds somehow.
816-235-2888 is the phone number here. Let's go to Matt from Olathe. Matt, good morning.
Hi, good morning, everyone. How are you?
Well, thanks, Matt.
Good. Thank you for your discussion. My question is in regards to legislation. What are some of the differences, as far as the legislators go, between how much influence national politics have and perhaps party lines have when it comes to determining the Kansas budget or some of these other laws, like I heard you debating and talking about, specifically the gun laws in KCU Med, and how much do you have of your own flexibility as an elected representative, or you feel that you have representing your district?
How about the influence of national politics? Stephanie, you want to take that?
Oh, I'd be happy to take that. And thank you for your call. I think that ultimately legislators are elected by the people, and they can either vote in the way that is appropriate to their district or appropriate to their morals or just appropriate in general, or they can vote party line or as they're told. I think as we see newer legislators coming in, there's always that first session where it's difficult, where you have that poll, where you have that fear. Oh, do I need to be voting with leadership? Should I be voting with my party? The state capitol is really does have kind of a dome effect in the fact that you're sharing every meal with these legislators. Mm. You are only really seeing politicians. And I think the more that a politician goes home, talks to their constituents, and stays in touch, the more likely they are to make better decisions. Certainly national politics come into play. And as a matter of fact, because of something that happened nationally, I introduced a bill to protect data privacy for consumers. And so a lot of times at the state level, we do have to combat what happens at the national level. But as far as political implications go, every legislator is pushed and polled in various ways and is often chastised for voting with a different party, so to speak. But what a lot of people don't know is that about 90% of the time, we're all voting unanimously on non-controversial mm-hmm. bills. Mm-hmm. It's only on those few controversial issues where you do see a divide.
Where the rubber hits the road.
Yes,
yeah.
But ultimately, the best legislators are the brave kind who will vote with their constituents and with their conscience, even when it causes detriment to them politically.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation with our Kansas legislators on the big issues facing lawmakers when they go back to Topeka just a week from today. Our number here again, 816-235-2888. Matt and Mike, hang on for a moment. We'll get to you in just a few moments. We'll talk about taxes. We'll talk about Medicaid expansion and a whole bunch more. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. On Friday's show, we explored the art of discovery and adventure. And we also heard from local poets who competed in the Poetry Throwdown this last weekend. You can find those conversations at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, we'll learn about the architectural concepts that have shaped urban planning. We'll also find out what Missouri Attorney General Josh Hawley is doing to fight human trafficking in the state. That's tomorrow on the show. This hour, we're visiting with a good group of Kansas lawmakers talking about the big challenges facing the legislature when lawmakers return a week from today. We're visiting with Stephanie Clayton. She's an Overland Park Republican. Melissa Rooker, a Fairway Republican. And Jared Owsley is a Merriam Democrat. Our number here, 816-235-2888. Jared, what's the most daunting item on the to-do list that you guys face when you come back from your vantage point? What's the one issue you think is going to be the toughest nut to crack of all of them?
My work has really been on this foster care committee. Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be time to devote to something like that, given everything else?
Well, we procedurally inserted into a Senate bill to allow for more calendar days, because this session has been fast-paced. I don't know a whole lot of sessions. I got two of them under my belt, but this session has been extremely fast-paced. Not a whole lot of calendar days, and the committee load was heavy. Mm-hmm. We heard a lot of powerful testimony from a lot of stakeholders, and I think the need for the committee to be organized is strong. And, you know, the speaker's been good. He blessed it once. He blessed it twice. He said we'd get to it in the veto session. And I hope that mm-hmm. when we get back, we do have time for that. You know, like I say, we have a lot of constitutional obligations to get back to when we get back to work. But I think that our children and families impacted by the foster care system are of great necessity.
That's a problem. It's been a problem for decades over in Topeka, the whole system.
It's a huge problem, mm-hmm. And there's a lot of room for improvement. And I think that oversight committee is more oversight. You know, I'm to the point of where, like I say, I don't want to see more oversight. I want to see actions. You know, yeah. We need to get stakeholders around the table, and we need to start talking about how we resolve. And without this committee right now, we're just kicking the can down the road, so to speak. We're not doing anything. And I think we have a great opportunity right now, you know, with the transition of administration here, you know, in a year, mm-hmm. And with the part three of the legislative post audit coming out May 1st, it should come out. Actually, I think it's April 28th.
Right.
So it'll come out right when we get back. And there's a lot of data that needs to be gone over. And I think a lot of opportunity for improvement. And so I know that's not heavy on most people's radar, but it's real
yours.
Heavy on mine.
Stephanie Clayton, the biggest, toughest nut to crack for lawmakers is going to be what?
Tax reform.
Yeah.
If we do not get good, solid tax reform, everything falls apart. Budget doesn't get balanced. School finance doesn't get properly funded. And we end up in this cycle that I think even those of us who are the most supportive of schools are tired of. And that's the cycle of litigation. If the state would only fulfill their constitutional obligation, then we could end all of this. We have this moment, this very important historical moment in Kansas legislative history right here in our session, and all we have to do is pass reasonable tax reform in order to make everything right again.
And you say reasonable tax reform, you're talking about what in one or two bullet points here?
Comprehensive tax reform. You saw the House pass a bill that it wasn't perfect. It didn't quite get us all the way there, but a bill that readjusted the income tax brackets, removed the LLC so-called loophole.
That was so important to Governor Brown back, and he brought in 2012. Right?
Yes, indeed. And I understand that it was important to him, but we tried it. It doesn't work. We need reform. And if we have this reform, then balance is restored to the legislature. And I think that overall, the voters showed us that they want Kansas to be a functioning governmental entity. Doesn't mean that government has to be large or impossible to control, but reasonable and functional. Mm-hmm. And we have this opportunity to give this to our constituents. And this is our moment. And that begins on May 1st when we go back and begin that work.
Does that mean lightening the load for poorer folks and increasing it for the well-to-do?
Perhaps it does. But mm-hmm. if we make things easier for poor Kansans in order for them to gain their own prosperity, then again, that leads to a more functional society, a more well-educated workforce, and prosperity for everyone. And I think that we can all agree that that is something that we all want.
Melissa Rooker, given the size of the Kansas budget deficit, is there any doubt in your mind that lawmakers will come out of this veto session calling for increases in taxes of some kind out there?
Well, we have to. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to track debate, and in any given public policy subject area, you see even the most conservative lawmakers fighting for better funding for the things in their particular interest area, mm-hmm. you know, so whether it be the social services arena or law enforcement or corrections or you name it. I routinely watch people fighting for better funding for their specific little, you know, their specific area.
Right.
And so I think when you put it all together, it even if you are a believer in smaller government, we all want government functioning properly. and effectively and efficiently. And mm-hmm. we can't do any of those things when we have cut to the extreme. Jared's foster care issue, probably the kids in our system would be far better served if there were more people mm-hmm. employed to inspect and visit.
Some conservatives, Melissa, are still saying they think they can do this mostly by cutting and not increasing taxes.
Balderdash.
Really?
We've cut the budget 9 times under this leadership. We've made those cuts.
And you think that's enough?
Well, I mean, when we did our efficiency study last year, one of the chief recommendations across the board was better investment. We can't improve security for state IT functions without investing in better, more modern software and systems.
And yet there's a good chance that the pension system for state workers is going to wind up being cut here. There's a good chance that highway funding will not be restored to what it has been
in
the past.
The path back to balance and long-term stability will require just the cash flow issue. What we go back in May and pass a tax reform package, those increases don't flow into the state for a year out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's still going to be some more pain, but we can't continue to do that. And we can't. The speaker back in February when we had our tax bill up for debate, and that the cohort of our colleagues was calling on budget cuts, not revenue increases, the speaker turned to our caucus and invited them to bring their ideas forth. Hmm. And none were forthcoming.
Marty wants to express his support for the moderate and knowledgeable and extremely hardworking legislators currently on air. He says this: it took only a short time to create legislation that began the drive off the cliff in Kansas. It will take years to repair. I will give them as long as it takes to get the job done. Alice from Overland Park emails this: I know that Republicans Owsley, Rooker, and Clayton are on board with making positive changes in the legislature. What is going to change with other legislators who refuse to override the governor's vetoes?
I answered this the other day in a different interview setting. We as lawmakers have to reclaim our power. We have the numbers. We have enough people
to override.
We've got it. We just, a couple more people need to recognize the power we hold, and mm-hmm. we'll be fine.
You know, given that, Stephanie Clayton, you know, the legislature is just a few votes short from perhaps overriding on Medicaid expansion. A hot issue has come up before this session. It may come up again. How confident are you that Medicaid expansion will, in fact, occur as a result of an override of Governor Brownback's vetoes?
Well, again, I would like to see a solution to that coming from the Senate. You see a lot of blockage coming from the Senate, specifically Senate leadership. And if we can see a plan that is brought forth by Senate leadership that they support, I think that we'll see movement on that.
You expect that for something like Medicaid expansion? Susan Weigel has come out against.
I really don't necessarily expect it from them. I would hope that they would do what the business community has been asking them to do repeatedly, because one real frustration here is that you see people falling back on calling it so-called Obamacare expansion. Mm-hmm. Now, I have gone through a major campaign that went against me saying that I supported Obamacare expansion, and I won overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
And so I think that you have some legislators that are maybe a little bit afraid that someone might say something not so nice about them if they support Medicaid expansion. But again, I think that it's recognizing that it's the time is now to do the right thing, that legislators would do well to support this because they would have the overwhelming backing of their mm-hmm. business communities, their local hospitals, their medical communities, and their constituents. And so maybe a couple of political implications, those might be unpleasant, but are easily overcome with just a little bit of communication and hard work.
You know, Jared Owsley, just 3, 4, 5 votes in a 165-member legislature might do the trick when it comes to Medicaid expansion. What do you make of it?
As a Democrat from Johnson County, I would say that our minority leader in the House is somewhat on a path to get this pushed through.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Minority Leader Jim Ward has been the outspoken voice upon getting Medicaid expansion passed, and I've had conversations with him where he says, it's not over. We're going to pass good legislation before we get out of the veto session. So I think there is a strong possibility of it. It's probably going to take more procedural maneuvers to bring it up, but it's happened once. Everybody's been home for 3 weeks now, or 2 weeks. They'll be there for another week. And I think with all that constituent communication that's occurred, hopefully we can get those three votes to override in the Senate.
Let me go to some more phone calls here. Mike from Kansas City, Kansas. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Thank the legislatures for coming to what we'll do is just kind of an open meeting for people to call in. As an educator, one of the things, as an older educator, I think it was 2 years ago, the school board, the state school board, recommended something that is near to my heart. We were hemorrhaging teachers out of Kansas because of pay. One way to stipulate this and take that tide away is letting teachers that are of the age to do so get to their capers now while they're still teaching without changing districts. I've seen no movement in that in the legislature, but I think that that would be a way to even pay, because the districts are so uneven in the way they pay their teachers. And some districts like mine, they just don't have the money. That's all there is to it. They're not lying to us. They're not pulling our leg. I know they don't. But what I'd like to see is the legislature to allow us to tap in, when you're of age now, when you age out, to into that CAPERS fund to help alleviate, because the teachers at the top, everyone put it, have been the longest, get the least raises when these things come down the pike. And
Mike, I've got to scoot here. I just got to get a comment from our panel. Given the state Supreme Court ruling, are teachers going to receive higher pay going forward, Melissa? I got like 30 seconds here.
We need to infuse more funding across the system to make that happen, but it should happen.
Mm-hmm. So you're hopeful.
I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
As
Stephanie?
Am I. Hopeful.
Yeah. Jared?
I should hope so.
Yeah.
They deserve the respect. And, you know, the House, overwhelmingly passed restoring their due process. So, you know, we're trying to give teachers back respect that they deserve. And obviously compensation for service is part of that.
We're going to have to leave our conversation there. I wish you all the best of luck battling all these big issues in the weeks to come. I want to thank again Stephanie Clayton, an Overland Park Republican, Melissa Rooker, a Fairway Republican, and Jared Owsley, a Merriam Democrat. Again, good luck, guys. Thanks for the good conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
Greg Eklund is here to talk sports today, particularly Bill Snyder and K-State football. And Greg, always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Good morning, Steve.
There's no question that this is a man who has built quite a record in Manhattan, Kansas. The Little Apple.
No question. And there's a lot of uncertainty over there right now over his future. It's been well publicized now since the bowl game that they were victorious in that Kansas State is wondering about its future with Bill Snyder as its football coach because he's been undergoing treatment for throat cancer.
Plus, he's what? He's 77, I think?
77, the oldest coach in college football.
Is that right?
Yes. And he's entering his 26th season as the K-State coach. And a lot has changed in and around Manhattan, aside from the football program itself, since he's been there, and a lot of it because of the success that K-State football has enjoyed through the years.
So a lot of people in Manhattan, Kansas, are really nervous about what this might mean for the city, for the school, and the future of the area without a Bill Snyder-led K-State football team.
Absolutely. And to give you an idea on that, about the time that K-State was starting to contend for a national championship, around 1997, 1998, there were 600 hotel rooms in the town of Manhattan. Today, there are around 1,300 hotel rooms.
More than doubled.
Yes. And is it all Bill Snyder? No. But as one businessman told me in Manhattan, it's because of the footprint that Bill Snyder has laid with the football program and with Kansas State in general that has led to a lot of this expansion around Matt.
That's amazing to me. Now, he's in the College Football Hall of Fame while he's still an active coach. That's pretty rare, too,
isn't
it?
It is. He picked up his 200th victory as a head coach last season, a monumental feat for Coach Snyder. And so he's beyond 200 wins now. And only the fourth to be in the College Football Hall of Fame as an active coach.
Why is he so good? What's been the Bill Snyder secret to as much success as he's had over so many years, Greg?
And he's a workaholic.
Is that right?
He is. I mean, he's probably, I think it's been documented that he's basically only has one meal a day. I don't know if he still carries on with that kind of diet, given especially the health issues that he's been dealing with recently, but burns the midnight oil in his office. And
doing what?
He's a very detail-oriented coach, going over details from video, and he is very much detail over the way they travel. He's detail-oriented over everything that involves with the football program on and off the field.
Is it go too far sometimes?
Perhaps. I mean, we saw it on the professional level where it didn't work when Scott Pioli was in town because he micromanaged so much that it took away from what he was doing on the football field. But Coach Snyder, on the college level, it's a different thing. And I think this is why the players respect and love him so much, is because he's not only looking at what they do on the football field, he's looking at what they are laying for themselves as a foundation for beyond their days at Kansas State. And that's why a lot of the Kansas State football players have gone on to be successful businessmen, athletes, whatever walks of life that they have chosen to do since they played football at K-State.
I'm visiting with KCUR's Greg Eklund, talking about the legacy of Bill Snyder, who's coaching again this season. He's been battling throat cancer, as you mentioned, Greg. How's his recovery going? What do we know about that, and what's happening there?
There's been very little that has come out publicly. In fact, Coach Snyder reluctantly acknowledged when this news came out that, yes, indeed, he has throat cancer and he's been undergoing treatment. He and his wife have been traveling to Kansas City for their treatments. And from what I understand, he's been at the conclusive stage of that treatment. So he had vowed to continue to do what he was able to do through the spring and through the spring football practices. And now that the treatment is at its apparent end, it appears that he's getting his strength back up and getting ready to do what he's accustomed to normally doing at this time.
You know, even on Saturday, Greg, K-State, as you know, had its spring football game, spring scrimmage, I guess. How did that go for the old coach?
Well, he was on the sideline for the first half, and normally for a spring football game, you would see him on the sideline for the entire
game,
scrimmage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he took the second half observing from the upper press box. And when asked about it after the game, he says there's always a reason. He didn't go into the reasons, but you would be led to believe that maybe fatigue was a factor given the fact that he's been so close to completing his treatments.
Do you have a sense of how many more years he wants to coach?
He has never really hinted as that. It's always been, you know, as long as I feel like I want to, and there's been no decrease from looking at it from the outside of his desire to continue coaching. It it seems like also that his son Sean, who is an assistant on his football staff and has been addressing the media a few times this spring during Coach Snyder's absence, is almost being groomed for that kind of position. So there's a lot of talk about Manhattan, about how this succession plan will play out. Is it going to be his son Sean who is considered, or is K-State going to be going outside the program under its new athletic director?
I was going to say, there is a new AD over there. His name is Gene Taylor. Was he at Saturday's game? He just got hired.
He doesn't take the office officially until May 1st. He was at the scrimmage on Saturday. It was his first chance to really get to know Coach Snyder, which is what he wants to do. He knows, because he's already been asked about it, that there's going to be a day when he is going to address this question head on. Hmm. And from his perspective right now, he doesn't really want to answer that question. His approach now is, I just want to enjoy being around him and getting to know him. And when that day comes, then I'll deal with it.
How do players, Bill Snyder's players, like playing for him?
They
love this detail-oriented coach.
They love playing for him because he's that grandfatherly type of coach that they don't want to let down. That's why they play so hard for him, because they know how much time he puts into it, and they want they want the results to pay off with all the efforts that are put into it, and they love playing for Coach Snyder.
You know, I've always been amazed, Greg, that, you know, over the years, K-State has had this robust football program, struggled more on the basketball side, but competitive. KU, on the other hand, has this incredible basketball program, but can't turn the page on football. Why? What's holding a major university like KU back after so many attempts at trying to get this thing turned around?
That's a great question, Steve. And I think one of
they haven't hired you as coach. Maybe that's one of the issues.
I was going to say part of it is stability. Coach Snyder has been there since 1989.
And so, KU hasn't had any of that.
They had Mark Mangino for the short-lived success when they went to the Orange Bowl, but they've been trying to find that formula ever since Mangino's departure. And K-State has been stable through all these years. And the thing that I found amazing from the spring game on Saturday are all the non-scholarship walk-ons that K-State has from the state of Kansas. Mm. So there's obviously, you know, that reputation that Coach Snyder has, that perhaps a player who has options to go elsewhere or play for a Division II program, but they have the belief that they could somehow make themselves through their weight program or what have you into better players and possibly a player on that level.
And maybe lots of mom and dads around the state of Kansas saying, we would love to have our sons play for Bill Snyder, while they still have a chance to do it.
Absolutely. Yep.
And that says a whole lot right there, too, doesn't it?
It does. Again, because of the stability, his credentials, everything speaks for themselves. He's at a point now where he's been around the program for so long, he's coaching the kids of some of the
just
players
amazing.
That he coached.
That's Greg Eklund, who covers sports for KCUR. Greg, sure appreciate it. Thanks
You're
very
welcome,
much.
Steve.
You bet. You can download our podcast. You can listen to previous programs. Just go to kcur.org/up-to-date. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. On tomorrow's program, the architectural concepts that have changed urban planning. We also examine human trafficking in the Midwest and learn what Missouri Attorney General Josh Hawley is doing to stop it. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Claire Tatacoro. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.